All righty, we continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. As we know, the NBA season has come to a close, but the next year is already started as we do have free agency, and you also got the NBA draft, and I'll be in the building on Wednesday, so will John Fanta, and you'll see him all across the draft coverage, and John is kind enough to join us right now. John, I appreciate it as always. Let's start with last night first. Let's go with the positive, the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's really impossible to dislike this team. They made the big trade years ago for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and then they build through the draft and developing a Jalen Williams, and then we've seen what Chet Holmgren has turned into.
Well, Zach, it's great to be with you, and you're exactly right. Sam Presti has done a magnificent job in building what is now a champion, and everybody's instant reaction, and rightfully so, was what would the game have been had Tyrese Haliburton played? But you know, you got to look back at it this way. To me, the Thunder got pushed by Indiana and would have gotten pushed more than Haliburton played. But at the end of the day, they faced a steeper task, I feel, when they got pushed by Nikola Jokic to a seventh game. And I thought they were poised and mature and the tougher team. That's when they won that game, I thought they're going to win the championship. Because same. that felt like a de facto finals. Even though it was earlier, it still felt that way. So when you look at this team, and we've had seven different champions in the last 7 years, there's no question that the door flew open for a dynasty to develop. But I think now more than ever, with contract status and with the second apron, of course, Oklahoma City's got everybody under contract. They've got 13 first-round picks since 2031. In the here and now, if you're a Thunder fan, I mean, if there were a Cloud 10, you'd be on it. Because what they have done, and done so with guys still in their early 20s, is absolutely ridiculous. But I think for both teams that were involved in the finals, it underscores this week that if you go into a draft and you're a fan of a team, when we were growing up, when you and I were growing up, if you didn't have a top five pick, you got an excuse waiver. That doesn't work out, doesn't work out. I don't think we're in an era where that's okay anymore. You know, that was so indicative of how important it is to roster build, what the Thunder just did. Cason Wallace, Zach, you and I watched him at Kentucky. The moment we saw him play, we're like, he's going to be a pest defensively. Lou Dort, he could be a solid role guy. He's athletic. He's tough. Chet Holmgren, if he stays healthy, it was the big if. Well, he did. And Presti took a risk there too. So it wasn't all just like brilliant move after brilliant move. It was educated risks. Oh, by the way, they still have guys, you know, they haven't even come to the fray yet in their organization due to injury and whatnot. And they're set up. And sports is better when the mighty power turns into something. The interesting thing is, in the here and now, it's impossible to really hate Oklahoma City. But a year from now, if they're back in the NBA Finals, nobody's going to like them outside Oklahoma City, because that's how we roll.
And obviously, they'll be the favorite to repeat as champions and also to come out of the Western Conference. But you look over at the East, if the Thunder get back there, all right, Tatum, Achilles, Damian Lillard, Achilles, Haliburton last night, Achilles. I know I'm in New York, right, all over the Knicks. You grew up as a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. The Knicks and the Cavs, even though the postseason was a disaster for the Cavs and the Knicks blew an opportunity in the conference finals, if you don't win one this year, I wouldn't expect to win one anytime soon with either of those core.
Which is why the Knicks coaching conundrum is so glaring now. Because when this move happened, you and I talked about it. You can't get this wrong. You can't. Now, you can, because there's plenty of ways that this could go awry. Because you could hire a guy that's a really good coach, Zach, but it just doesn't fit in year one. Whoever gets this job doesn't have the affordability of year one.
No, it's win now. It's championship or bust.
And if you don't, you're going to be scrutinized to the nth degree, and it's not going to be, well, I'm fascinated by the following year. No, because the following year, it's going to be, Boston's reloaded and ready to go. Indiana's got Halliburton back, and they did this in their front office. Where's Giannis going to land? Now, that's obviously fascinating here for a team like the Knicks or for whoever ends up getting him or however this ends up with him. Orlando and Detroit are going to be better. Like right now, if I were I'm actually going to go outside the box here. I wasn't thinking about the Knicks and Cavs. I was thinking about the Pistons and Magic. I'm like, if I'm Detroit and I know that I've got Cade, who's blossomed into a star, how do I position myself better to contend, knowing that there's really an open doorway to take off for an Eastern Conference title? Same thing with Orlando, who's been so banged up. But the point is, yeah, if you're Kenny Atkinson in Cleveland, you're going into year two, and you were brought in to take the Cavaliers to a level that JB Bickerstaff, that the organization felt he was incapable of. In a lot of ways, the Knicks are similar. The Knicks are hiring a coach. Atkinson got 1 year. The Knicks are not doing that. They're hiring a coach who all the pressure in the world is on that figure to get it done. And do I believe that the Knicks are in a position after I thought then if the Knicks played the Thunder in the finals, I think the series would have ended in 5 games.
John Fanta here with us. No, it may be six, probably at most, but you're probably right. The Pacers are just a grittier team. All right, let's get to the draft coming up on Wednesday. Cooper Flagg, we know, is going to be the number one overall pick. What's the immediate impact you think year one with him going to Dallas?
I think that he will have a really good rookie season. He'll be the rookie of the year. Do I think he's going to be this mainstream all-star in year one? I don't know about that. I think in 2 or 3 years, he's going to turn into one of the league's toughest, fiercest competitors who just is unstoppable in the lane. He is so tailor-made, Zach, for success in the NBA because, and I'm being real here, this guy is not wired to take plays off in December and January. Now, what kind of postseason player is he going to be? Did he have some instances in Duke where he came up short? Yes, he did. He did. He takes that with him into the NBA. Like for a number one pick, it was not all sunshine and rainbows at Duke. In fact, I thought that his stock got hurt too much when a lot of people were watching college hoops in November and he had a couple of moments down the stretch, Champions Classic against Kentucky and then against Kansas out in Vegas, where then people were like, oh, he's not made for the moment. Well, he created so many terrific moments for Duke. He's going to be a 15, 16, 17-year player in the National Basketball Association. I think he'll be an all-star for 10 of those years. I think that at worst, he's the third best player on a really, really good team. And at best, he's a top five player for several years in the NBA because, Zach, he's elite defensively. He limits whoever he's guarding with his wingspan and his versatility. On the offensive end of the floor, he attacks the basket at will. The perimeter game hit all the doubts about the perimeter game. In the back half of the season, he shot 40% from three. So the answer to your question is, I believe he's better than Zion. And I believe that there's a case to be, I think he's the best number one pick, I believe, in the last at least 10 years. And to me, he's the most compelling. He's as compelling a number one pick as the likes of, the top of the top, as the likes of a LeBron. Like that's what I think of when I think of this guy. He is in that category.
John Fanta here with us. So he was Batman at Duke. Robin was Con Knipple. Down the stretch, he really elevated his stock. What's his ceiling on the next level?
Knipple. Knipple is a guy who I expect to fit right into the league and be a guy who you're going to see, as an all-star potentially. Not a superstar because he's limited athletically, Zach, and that could hurt him defensively, but terrific shot maker. Tough as hell. Built well. Mature beyond his years. And in a league right now where it's never been more valuable to be a solid complementary shooter. He is going to be able to thrive in the NBA. And that's why I think he's tailor-made for the Charlotte Hornets at four. The Hornets have been amongst the league's worst teams in perimeter shooting for now several years. And I think when you look at them and LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller, they've got some pieces, but they don't have an identity. I'm not saying that Con Knipple gives you an identity, but I do know that he's going to help your identity. More so than guys like than a VJ Edgecombe or even a Trey Johnson. Like,
sure.
I love their individual talents. But Knipple established something this past year at Duke. He's a little bit more vocal than Flack. So to me, Con is poised. If he falls below six in this draft, you know, I understand that there's a couple of teams in this draft, meaning Utah, the Wizards at six. Like, I actually feel bad for the Wizards because I think they're like, they're stuck. They got a couple contracts that are, the Jordan Poole situation's strange. They said they, you know, it's not working out, but then he ends up having a pretty good year. Con Knipple may not be he's not the Ace Bailey swing, but man, Zach, that guy's going to get you some base hits, you know, the comparable to him. He is a lock to be successful for a long period of time.
Well, here's what we know. We know Flagg's going one. We know Harper's going two, John Fanta. A month and a half ago, I would have said, okay, Ace Bailey then goes three. Now, everyone I'm talking to, and this has just been the rhetoric also online, immature and getting horrible advice. How legitimately far will Ace Bailey, you think, fall on Wednesday night?
Well, I'd be surprised, Zach, if he falls below the Pelicans at seven. Now, there's an interesting dichotomy here with the New Orleans Pelicans and an interesting situation because Joe Dumars comes in as vice president and you've got new leadership. There's been reporting that suggests, and people that I've talked to in the scouting world suggests, the Pelicans are infatuated with Bailey. But the Pelicans also used, I believe, over 40 starting lineup combinations this past year. And they're another team that's really all over the place in terms of how their roster is constructed. And there's a Zion Williamson elephant in the room of, like, what's next? So if you're New Orleans and you're picking where you're at seven, coming off your worst year since 2011-12, you sit here and you say, all right, well, do we need somebody that maybe doesn't help us in the win column right away, but it might help us in terms of one, buzz, two, star power, three, could sell some more tickets. Like, Bailey's that, he is, if all works out, he's that type of figure.
Is he going to fall, though, that far, in your opinion?
I think he could.
Okay.
I wouldn't take, if I were the Philadelphia 76ers, I wouldn't touch it with a 100-foot long pole. Because I don't think he helps them, and I think they're in it to win now. I mean, they have to be. They over 70% of their money is with Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and Paul George. He could fall there. What's going to be interesting is if Washington, or New Orleans for that matters, says, we're going to trade up. We're going to trade up. We're going to get him. And if you're Philadelphia, you know, San Antonio would need a real haul. I don't see it. I think they're going to pick Dylan Harper. I'd be very surprised if they didn't. But I do think that's what's fascinating about this draft night is I think Bailey could fall to seven. I do. I don't think he falls past that, Zach, just because in this draft, to me, I'd want to pick 1 to 7 or 19 to 30. 8 to 18, very blurry in terms of upside and who falls there. I think there's going to be plenty of value in the back end of this first round, but I don't see it falling beyond seven. The question is, can Philadelphia swindle someone into trading up for Bailey?
So when you look at the Spurs at two, because we just mentioned Harper, John Fanta, so you have Wemby there, you got Castle, you got Fox. This just seems as if that team is not only on the rise, but they could maybe be a contender this upcoming season if everyone stays healthy.
They are positioned. San Antonio is absolutely positioned. And you know, as much as like, I'm so glad Greg Popovich is okay.
Yeah.
And God bless him. He's one of the game's greatest. That his health issues and the different things happening there just create a natural like, okay, where do we go as an organization? That's tough because they're trying to ascend. And I'm glad Pop's going to stay in the organization. Again, how could you not love what he's meant for the game of basketball? But now they have a clear direction. They've got a clear what's next. And so much of this is dependent on Wemby's health. But when you look at Steph Castle coming in and Devin Vassell and how they're positioned as a roster, now, you know, some people out there are like, well, does Harper fit in that backcourt? Don't they already have some weapons? Get out of here. Did you watch the NBA Finals? You watch the playoffs? You can never have enough backcourt weapons. You
Like
can
pitchers in
never.
baseball, you can never have enough of them.
The Pacers got to the finals with the deepest backcourt in the league. Like, and oh, by the way, as I'm watching Indiana, I'm like, damn, Ben Mathurin and TJ McConnell. I mean, Ben Mathurin is 23. Zach, either he's going to flourish in Indiana or they're going to trade him. And
Sure.
they could get terrific value for him. So Harper, you know, in any other year, he is the headliner. And he's still getting a lot of headlines between the family. Honestly, it's amazing to me. I will say this to you. What's amazing to me is that Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey were at the same school,
Couldn't make the tourney. Couldn't even close.
couldn't make the tourney, couldn't come close, but I will say this. They couldn't be more opposite at the end of the day in how their circles are operating.
Yeah.
And to me, I will say this, deep, a little bit of a deep cut. It is very interesting to me, and you're close to New Jersey as well, like me, how 10 months ago, Harper and Bailey, their camps were well intermixed. We're going to do things the same way. And I'll be honest, in the last, you know, couple of months, it's very much Dylan Harper is Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey is Ace Bailey because Dylan Harper's like, I'm not getting caught up in people having to pay to interview me. I'm not getting caught up in not doing a, who doesn't do a formal workout with a team?
I'll tell you, it's Shedeur Sanders-like, and also I get some Ben Simmons vibes from Ace Bailey. And I was there in Philly when Ben Simmons came in. I think he got a lot of bad advice, and I think there was some work ethic problems and some maturity issues.
The difference with the NBA is, one, you don't have a fifth round of a draft, and
Yes.
two, to me, there's a like Ace Bailey is so special from an upside perspective that if you were to continually pass, the drop-off's not going to happen because again, it's the NBA draft, and if you take Bailey at 7, 8, or 9, you gain a lot more if he pans out than you're harmed if it doesn't. You're
Last thing,
harmed if at 3, it's a
yeah,
total flameout.
sure. Last thing I'll ask you, John Fanta, because I know you got to run, and we always appreciate it. Jalen Brunson, right? When he was at Villanova, all he did was win, and then for whatever reason, people didn't view him as this great prospect. It took him some time, but now
Unbelievable.
he's a star. That's what he is, and he's turned around the Knicks. Is the same kind of thing happening here with Walter Clayton Jr., who we know
Yeah.
could be a great shot maker? Because I keep on seeing these mock drafts. They have him going in the 20s.
Yeah. I have him going 26 to the Nets. And by the way, I would sit here and tell you right now, there is no franchise that has more on the line heading into this NBA draft than the Brooklyn Nets, who have stacked picks up for future years. Well, if you're a Brooklyn Nets fan, you have, you know, 5 of the top 36 picks. You better get this right. Or at least you better hit it on at least two, if not three of them. I have him going 26th. To me, he could go 17th or 18th, and I'll take no issue with it because when you've got guys like Will Riley, who I still think has a long way to develop in terms of his defensive capabilities and his feel for the game for making the right play offensively. You know, even a Jace Richardson, like I love Jace's upside, I love his athleticism. I still have questions about his offense. Walter Clayton's plug and play. This is a league now where if you are not a top prospect, meaning I say top, I'm going to say top 6 to 8. If I am a team picking after 15, I want plug and play. Because unless I have the luxury of my team is, Oklahoma City, how does Oklahoma City have two of the top 24 picks in this draft? Unless you're them and you could say, we could pick a Pokuševski. We could pick somebody outside the box and say, stash him away for 2 or 3 years and then we'll figure something out. If you are a team trying to win now, which there are plenty in the 20s trying to do so, and even in the late teens, how could you not want to pick Walter Clayton, who just owned the NCAA tournament, was the best bucket getter in college basketball, and was just a stud? And he's not the only one. Anik Clifford out of Colorado State, you could say, well, it's the Mountain West. Still a damn good league. And all that guy did the last 2 years was just hoop and earn it and outwill people. So there are a couple of gems in this draft. Rashear Fleming out of St. Joe's is a very polarizing figure. Ryan Kalkbrenner out of Creighton, how does he fit in to the equation? I think that that is one of the most fascinating parts of this draft because of the way college basketball is structured now is we actually have a ton of one and dones. The whole lottery could be one and done guys with the exception of maybe one. But you could, this is why I say I'd want to pick 19 to 30, Zach, because I could end up having more value for the present and future with a guy who just played 4 years or 5 years of college basketball than I ever will with a 2 or 3 year developmental project. Because in 2 or 3 years in the NBA, the current roster construction of this, you might not have that luxury.
He's the great John Fanta. John, we appreciate it. We'll be watching your coverage all throughout the week. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Zach. Appreciate you. See you at the draft.
Hey, Stu, you see the name of the lefty that the Mets just added to their bullpen?
I saw it earlier today, yeah. It's a interesting name to say the least.
His name is Richard Lovelady, but he goes by Dickie Lovelady. That's interesting. Now, obviously, Richard Dick, I know that, but when your last name is Lovelady, to then go by Dickie Lovelady. That seems like that's a guy that is trying to market himself in a certain way. A little wild thing feel to it.
It would seem that way.
Yeah. That could turn the Mets season around, though. Not that the Mets have been horrible, but they've not been playing well as of late. And now the Phillies have a one game lead on them in the NL East. But that could be very gimmicky Mets where they rally behind the Dickie Lovelady. Rally behind the Dickie Lovelady. Yes, that would be something. Why are you laughing? You think that's very, very funny how I said that, Stu? What,
It's
because I said they're
amazing.
behind the Dickie Lovelady?
I just love it. It's
Instead of in front of the Dickie
this
Lovelady?
year's grimace, if you will.
Yes. This year's Dickie Lovelady. Oh my God. Two things that annoy me. Samter has an incredible ability when I understand when he has a take. And he just casually throws it into the rundown, his take. Or he's just trying to annoy me. Maybe it's not his take. I'm looking on this rundown today. I'm getting ready for the show. And on the rundown, there's a question here. Halliburton injured. Is the Thunder championship tainted? Is it marred? Do you actually believe that it's tainted, Samter?
Oh, yeah, asterisk all over it.
You're not being serious.
No, of course not.
Okay, good.
But,
Because if that was the case, I was about to erupt.
to be the best, you have to beat the best. And so it's not tainted. It just sucks that we didn't get to see the two best teams on the court last night.
Okay. It's unfortunate. It stinks. But are there actual people today that are trying to take away from the Thunder's championship by saying, oh, well, they beat Halliburton in games. Oh, they won game seven with Halliburton injured. Even if Halliburton plays, I'm not even sure if I don't think the Thunder lose that game still. I don't. I get it's a close game back and forth. He gets hurt in the first quarter early. Second quarter, they had a little bit of a run. I still think even if Halliburton's playing that in the third quarter, the Thunder still distance this game. I really do. The Thunder won 64 games in the regular season, or 68 games in the regular season. They won 64 total games this year by double digits. I think eventually Jalen Williams and SGA are going to take over. And those two players, even though this Pacers team were absolutely incredible this year, and they exceeded your expectations in the NBA Finals, but this whole idea now, when a team wins a championship, we just got to try to take away for them to be able to have an entertaining segment, that's just nonsense to me. The Halliburton injury is horrible. It is terrible to see. But to sit here and be like, oh, is this championship tainted? Stop. Stop. It would just fall in line with the narrative of so many people just trying to discredit or find their way not to give the Thunder their flowers this year. The other part, I'll ask this question. I'm curious if we go around the room here. You think it was irresponsible of the Pacers to play Halliburton in Game 6 and Game 7? Like, we had this conversation on Tuesday. The minute we saw the Shams tweet when he was getting the MRI for the calf strain, I said, this reminds me, it's eerily similar to what happened with Durant, where Durant had the calf strain, then, by the way, plays, and then pops the Achilles, ruptures the Achilles in the NBA Finals up against the Raptors. The Raptors go on to win the championship. Stu, do you think it was irresponsible to play Halliburton?
I don't. I think the fact that they were this far and they're, you know, they're basically on the, they had a really good chance of winning it all, and they could have won it all. I mean, the fact they were this far and it was this late in the series, I don't think so.
Samter, you think it was irresponsible?
I don't think it was irresponsible, but I also, like, the fact that all of us, we're not doctors, yeah, but we all said, you said it first, and we all saw it. Calf injuries in the NBA this late in the season leads to Achilles injuries. We all fought it. Let's hope that his Achilles doesn't go.
And if it was a regular season, he would have been out for weeks.
100%.
Yeah.
And we're all thinking it. And I get it. It's game seven. You lay it on the line. You take that chance. I don't think the Pacers or Halliburton were irresponsible, but I do think that they knew that this risk was very likely to happen.
Yeah.
And it's a really risky thing to do.
This is going to sound a little bit crazy, but stay with me on this. We played Carlisle that day. Now, someone got what he was saying incorrect, where they made it appear like he was doubtful, that like Carlisle was doubtful that he was going to play. But when you listen to Carlisle, it did sound as if Carlisle was basically, we don't know what to expect, and we're not that optimistic about his status. That's the way that at least felt when you go through everything that he was saying at the podium. I think if this decision was only in the Pacers' hands, he actually may not have played. But when you have your star who got you there, who is doing what every star should do in that spot, it's game six of the NBA Finals, and it's game seven of the NBA Finals, I'm good. And then also, he played in game six, and what did we all say after game six? It's remarkable how good he looked. Look how good he looked. You know, I know he wasn't great, but he gave you a lot more than what you thought. You're not thinking about that injury going into game seven. And once you got through game six, no one's thinking about it in game. We're all thinking about, okay, he's obviously hurt, but you're not thinking he's going to rupture his Achilles because you got through game six. And it just showed you how lucky he was that he got through game six. I don't fault Halliburton for wanting to play. I don't fault the Pacers for playing him whatsoever. But now when you've seen this with KD, and you've seen now in just this postseason, three players, and this is just bizarre, all wearing the number zero, suffer this injury. I wonder the next time it happens when a player's on the injury report this late in the year with an Achilles injury, or excuse me, with a calf strain, if the team or maybe the player says, hey, I'm not doing that. And even though we all sit there and go, you got it. And I said this exactly like this on Tuesday when that injury happened. I said, how many people are going to say, you got to play, it's game six. I said it exactly that way. And I said, I totally get it. You want to play, but it could lead to something where you're out all of next season. Because when Kevin Durant, he's got to play, boom, out for a year. Halliburton, you got to play, boom, out for a year. It's not the wrong decision to play him. It's just the worst unfortunate outcome that could have happened. So I wonder now moving forward, what's like next year, Samter. We're in, if I think it's in the first or second round, it's different. Maybe even the conference finals is different. But if you're in game five, let's say, of the NBA Finals next year, in a series that's 2-2 going into game five, and let's say Jalen Brunson of the Knicks, let's just say, for argument's sake, it's Jalen Brunson. If he has a calf injury, you think the team's going to play him in game five? That, to me, is now the question. Mike, that's the question. Or are they going to play him moving forward? If something like that happens again, you look at it.
Listen, if you're in round two and it's game five, game six, hell no. NBA Finals game seven, I guess that's the one spot where maybe it's worth the risk. But man, like moving forward, calf injuries. Like remember ACLs were like every second of every football game there was an ACL injury.
Oh yeah.
And then
remember when AP recovered from it? And so I forget what the time was, but he had a remarkable recovery, and then it was up. Everyone recovered so much quicker. And NFL players tell you all the time they much rather tear their ACL, not that you rather have
than have a head injury.
Than rupture an Achilles.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, you look at it like, you know, we had the ACLs in football, right? We had in baseball the UCLs, and then basketball. This Achilles thing seems like we saw Kobe a while ago, but like we saw three guys in the playoffs. Three guys this year. Something is going on.
It's kind of the bringing up Tommy John. It's the Tommy John of basketball, I would say.
It's becoming that. Like, I don't know if it's the sneakers.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's the courts. Something's going on because this is, I mean, why is this becoming so prevalent? It started with KD and it's just steamrolling every year.
Maybe, I think it was Jay Will who maybe said this earlier. I forget who it was. But someone was saying, this is not a case on why LeBron is better than Jordan, but they're saying the players now move more in the game, even though there was more contact back then, they move more now in the game than when Jordan was playing. I don't know if it was J-Will, I forget who it was, but someone said that earlier this morning when I was listening to them. And maybe that's what it is. But I'll tell you this, it's another reason maybe why you could reduce that regular season. We do not need as many games as they play. They won't because of money. But if you're really looking out for the health and safety of the players, you know, I could definitely do with 20 fewer NBA regular season. I'll never reduce it that drastically. But some of those COVID years or strike year when they reduce the number of games, to me, that's a better regular season product. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Do onside, offside, next update time first. Here's Zach. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. It's time to answer Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Kevin New Orleans says, Zach, do you think any of the other players outside of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on OKC could be a number one on another team? You could submit a question by tweeting at INS Sports at or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If you're saying on like a championship team, probably not. If you're saying a team that could maybe go compete in a play-in tournament spot or maybe just get a playoff spot outwards, like, yeah, sure, Jalen Williams. You know, let's see when Chet gets more muscle on him and, you know, maybe a little more fat on him because he is a beanpole. You know, maybe. But I think that's what makes them so great. They play the perfect roles. Shai is your star, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Jalen Williams is an incredible number two, and Chet is a sensational number three. I think on most teams, yeah, Jalen Williams is a two on a championship team, and Chet Holmgren's a three on a championship team. And that's the formula that they used here. You have a star, and then another great young player, and then another player that has more potential, but we'll see what happens down the road. All righty, let's get to a little onside, offside. Hit it.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
All righty, Stu, what do we got?
All right, so the Raiders, they added Geno Smith as their starting quarterback this offseason, but were heavily linked with free agent Sam Darnold before they made the deal for Geno. Well, now The Athletic's Mike Silver reports that Tom Brady was not in favor of the Raiders pursuing Darnold, essentially blocking the move. Onsides, offsides, you'd rather have Geno as your quarterback than Darnold?
I'd rather have Sam Darnold because of the fact that he's younger and the Raiders really don't have a future at the quarterback position. I'm still skeptical that if Darnold, I don't believe that Darnold's a franchise quarterback, but both of those guys you can move on from rather quickly, so I'd rather go with the younger guy in Darnold than Geno. So you'd rather have Geno as your quarterback than Darnold. For this Raiders situation, I would go offside.
Offside!
Fanatics Fest was a rousing success, full of superstars like Tom Brady, LeBron, Wemby, Eli Manning, Kevin Durant, and more. Now, Dolphins receiver Tyreek Hill also made an appearance and was adamant that Miami needs to keep Jalen Ramsey, saying, quote, I'm going to go get him back. Full court press. We need Ramsey. He's a dog. He just need him on the Dolphins. End of quote. Onside all sides, the Dolphins should keep Jalen Ramsey.
The Dolphins have zero leadership. Seriously. How many times you hear a guy wants out that he's not out? Like, you look at Tyreek Hill, now it's Jalen Ramsey, and you got the two bozos there, Dumb and Dumber, and McDaniel and Greer running the show there. So the Dolphins should keep Ramsey. Well, do you want to be there or you don't want to be there? And do they even want him there? It seems like the answer is no and no, but then they want something for him, but teams aren't willing to give what they want for him. So I would say that they should get rid of him. So you ask me the Dolphins, you keep Ramsey, I'm going offside.
Offside.
What a mess they're going to be.
For the third time this postseason, a superstar suffered a devastating Achilles injury. This time, Tyrese Haliburton going down in Game 7. Now, the Pacers star was off to a hot start, scoring 9 points in just 7 minutes, hitting 3-of-4 from downtown before he left the game when they were down by just 2 points. Onside's all sides, the Pacers would have won the game if Haliburton didn't get hurt.
I took him when I knew that Haliburton was playing at laying 6.5. I would have taken them laying 7.5, the Oklahoma City Thunder. I get it when he gets hurt and then what it looked like at the end of the first half. I still think the Thunder would have won the game last night. So the Pacers would have won the game if Haliburton didn't get hurt. I'm going offside.
Offside.
The Suns finally traded Kevin Durant to the Rockets, with the move being announced hours before Game 7 while KD was on stage at Fanatics Fest. In return, Houston sent rising star Jalen Green, instigator Dylan Brooks,
Bum Brooks,
the 10th overall pick in a draft, and 5 second round picks to Phoenix. Some believe the Suns would have then flipped Green for another star, but Arizona Sports' John Gambadoro reports that Phoenix will keep Green to pair with Devin Booker. Onside all sides, the Suns would be better off trading Green to add a front court star to pair with Booker.
I don't think that you're going to be able to get a front court star for Jalen Green, if I'm just being honest. I don't think the league views very highly of him right now. So I think this was the best deal that you probably could have got that KD also would have accepted or would have played nice with. Because whatever was happening in Minnesota, he had no interest in going there. And I think him and Anthony Edwards would be at least more interesting to me. Not that the Rockets, right? With their young core, it's very good, and the Rockets had a very good season. But just from what I would have liked to see, and I would have seen Durant play with Anthony Edwards. But the Suns would be better off trading Green to add a front court starter pair. I don't even think that's realistic. So therefore, you know what? They would be if they could get the star. I don't think the star is going to be real. So, you know what? The question, the way I'm going to answer it is on sides. I just don't think that's realistic.
OKC won the NBA title, and eyes are already looking ahead to next season. But with the Haliburton injury and the Kevin Durant trade shaking up the odds a bit, OKC is the clear favorite at plus 220, the best odds since the 18-19 Warriors, followed by the Cavs and Rockets at plus 800, the Knicks at plus 850, the Celtics and Magic at plus 1,300, and the Timberwolves and Lakers at plus 1,400. Onside, offside, you would take OKC over the field to win it all next year.
I'm going to go offside, and here's why. It has nothing to do with OKC. Everyone assumes just Boston is going to go back-to-back this year. This year kind of shows you expect the unexpected, and also injuries could be a real SOB and a real championship killer. So I would take OKC over the field to win the title next year. I'm going to take the field in that situation, even though the field is not that strong with all these injuries. So offside.
Offside.
Shohei Ohtani got back on the mound for the Dodgers yesterday, starting the game and going just one inning, but he got 2 strikeouts, his first 2 of the season. Then the three-time MVP smashed a triple in the 7th before adding a homer in the 8th, driving in 5 runs on the day. Onside all sides, the Dodgers should keep Ohtani as a short inning reliever for the rest of the season rather than building him up as a starter.
I think that could be the role for him long term. I think, though, now you got to build him back up with the thought process of being a starter again. So I think that you have to go through that process still until there becomes that day when you go, okay, maybe we'll just use him out of the pen. So the Dodgers should keep Ohtani as a short inning reliever for the rest of the season rather than building him up as a starter. Now I continue to build him up as a starter. Offside.
Offside.
All right, last one here, and a surprise to some, but not you.
That's of course.
Dana White and the UFC.
I know everything. Nothing surprised.
Dana White and the UFC announced that John Jones was officially retiring from the sport And
quack, 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 Tom
Aspinall will take over as the heavyweight champ.
Quack, 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 Mr. Duxworth.
White said that the Jones-Aspinall fight was a done deal before Jones' retirement, which was then followed by allegations of drunk driving and leaving the scene of an accident. Onside to offsides, John Jones ducked Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, I don't know what's true or not and what happened away from the octagon. It's not the first time John Jones has been in controversy. I don't think that's the reason why he's walking away. It's because if it looks like a duck, if it walks like a duck, and if it quacks like a duck, guess what? It's a duck. He's ducking Tom Aspinall because he thought he was going to lose. Quack, 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 quack. That's what I got to say to John Jones. And if he was in front of me, I don't know how much I'd be quacking because he'd probably kick my ass, if I'm just being honest. But he ducked him. How else am I supposed to talk about this? So John Jones ducked Tom Aspinall, quack, quack, on sides. Seems like we're in the middle of a Geico commercial or Don Imus back in the day. 24 past the hour, quack, quack. All righty, fun show today. Big thanks to John Fanta. Big thanks to Samter. Big thanks to Stu. Big thanks to our intern. Big thanks to each and every one of you for tuning on in. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. We out. Bye-bye.